Yep.
The AFL is full of talking heads.
It was insipid performance.
It's not the first time you've turned on a commentator.
They threaten clubs all the time.
But now two men ask the question,
why so serious?
Been spending most of our lives listening to Titus and Paradise.
And welcome to this week's podcast. I think it's might be up to about number 39, I reckon. A Neville Jetta.
Close enough.
Close enough for rock and roll. I'm Sergio Paradise. We're here for the Greenfield Post, and I'm joined, as always, by a bloke who I'm pretty sure has never shot a gorilla, but don't tempt him. It's Titus O'Reilly.
Wrestled one. Explains the disfiguring.
Was there a four-year-old involved at the time?
I was the one that threw the four-year-old in as a shield to try and get it in front of me. I would do that too.
Just to protect yourself.
People act brave, but I would totally probably throw a four-year-old in front of me to run.
There's nothing wrong with
it. I'd like to say I wouldn't, but I probably would.
Open cowardice, there's nothing wrong with it.
There's that Seinfeld episode where George Costanza runs out and during a fire drill and starts pushing women and children out of the way. And I relate a little bit too much to that.
Yeah. As George once also said, he's proud to be a quitter. He comes from a long line of quitters.
That's right.
And that's pretty much us as well. Now, what have you been looking at this week, Titus?
Suddenly Brendan Bolton is the greatest coach that's ever lived.
Ever been. Oh, babyface Bolton.
Isn't it amazing? Colin Mack wrote in and said, does Brendan Bolton's coaching success prove midgets can do more in the AFL than be set on fire by St Kilda players?
Is he that tiny?
That question's managed to insult about four groups of people. I like it.
And the great thing about that question from Colin is that he's brought back that fantastic story that everyone had forgotten from 2 years ago.
So that's one of my all-time favourite footy stories.
One of the greatest.
What's a great story is one that you couldn't, if you made it up as a fictional story, it would seem far-fetched, but life is stranger than fiction regularly.
It was like when I watched The Wolf of Wall Street. Remember they had the midgets and they used them as 10-pin bowling.
Yeah.
Right, and I was sitting there watching, that's nothing. Set them on fire.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, Jordan Belfort. Then impress me that way.
So Bolton's going well. Suddenly they're 5-5, yes. Same as Melbourne.
Yeah.
So Paul Roos has had
he's a dud. Yeah.
Forever to turn them around and millions of dollars.
Mm.
And Brendan Bolton's come in and just done it in 1 second. Alex Emery's written in, are Brendan Bolton's first 10 weeks better than Damien Hardwick's first 10 years? I don't think he's had 10 years, but the answer is yes.
Yeah,
if he has another.
I couldn't disagree with that. The thing about Brendan Bolton, you have a look at him, most AFL coaches, that they have that, even if they haven't been there long, they have that world weariness sort of beaten down a bit, their hair's prematurely graying, they look tougher and older than they are. Whereas Brendan Bolton looks like he should be coaching Auskick. He should be out there just rolling out
the footy
to eight-year-olds and seeing if they can handball it back. He doesn't look like an AFL coach.
This has happened before, though, where a coach does well over a short period of time and everyone suddenly, you know,
jumps
this happened
on board
with Ken Hinckley, remember? Ken Hinckley, and I was guilty bit of this, of he's the greatest coach ever. Why didn't everyone else pick him up?
Mm.
And then suddenly a few years later, it's not looking quite so good. Maybe that's wishful thinking because I don't like Carlton being good. And I'm just hoping that it's all a... I know, suddenly the Carlton fans are all happy again. You know, I haven't seen a Carlton fan since 1995.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they haven't really been factored into my worldview, but suddenly they're all
they're
work,
up and about, aren't
all
they?
All happy. Terrible stuff. Cody wrote in, I seem to be in a dream where Carlton look half decent and Fremantle can't beat an Auskick side. Any tips on how to wake up? That is a nightmare.
That is a nightmare. And there's no tips on how to wake up there, Cody. But what you're saying, you're on the money. Carlton are playing half decent footy and Freo, you know, who are tanking, quite obviously, can't beat an Auskick side. So how to wake up? Just stay awake.
Just never sleep. Caffeine.
Never go to sleep. It's worked for plenty of AFL players in the past, that kind of thing.
Now, were you one of the people that got really upset about high tackles?
No.
Oh,
I'm the opposite. Now, high tackles.
You like head trauma, that's why.
I don't mind a good coat hanger. That's why I reckon Lindsay Thomas was hung out to dry when he fixed up Lockie Hunter. It was just a good old-fashioned coat hanger. Look, yeah, as you say, it was back in the spotlight, Friday night's game, North and Sydney. Couple of free kicks to Lindsay Thomas and one to Hewitt from the Swans.
Yeah.
And a lot of pundits and ex-footballers and and experts have come in, you know, decrying the fact, furious that, that players are going into a tackle, dropping their knees so they get a high one around the neck. It's been going on for years. Joel Selwood's a master of it. They're now training to do so. Players will do anything within the rules to exploit them, get a free kick. I honestly don't see what the fuss is. Look, just to finish, when you're a kid, you're learning footy, the first thing your coaches tell you when you go to tackle a bloke, watch his hips. You go for the hips.
Hips don't lie.
Hips don't lie, exactly. You go for the hips, and if you go too high, it's a free kick. It's not that hard, and these guys are the elite footballers. It doesn't bother me.
It is pretty hard at real time, though, in the AFL when someone's like lurches backwards into your tackle.
Oh, I must admit, that one was that one looked a bit sus.
It was. The thing, so I have a few thoughts on this. One, Lindsay Thomas copped it, and a few people were saying, well, it's not fair. So I'd say two things. Lindsay's done a lot of diving, in the past. He's got a bit of a well-earned reputation of
a diver,
playing for free kicks, yes, and whether it's ducking the head or... So if you play that way, you're going to cop it. Now, there are other players, though, that do it as much as him, if not more. Yep. And that's where it frustrates me. You know, I don't have a problem with Lindsay copping it, but you can't then turn around and say Joel Selwood is a legend when he is light years ahead of anyone else in high free
Joel
kicks.
Joel Selwood's brilliance is his timing is just spot on. He doesn't make it look obvious. He just drops the knees slightly as the arm's coming across his chest. Bingo, round the neck.
But the thing about this is we can say, well, that's just clever, but when we're trying to knock concussion, get it out of the game, and you see people having, in the NFL, but, you know, and the science hasn't been done as much on the AFL plays, having serious long-term health impacts that lead to early death, ducking your head and getting blows to the head on purpose, and kids watching that, and they're now saying there's young players now coming into the league who have learned that
who are experts
junior
at it,
footy. That is a slightly worrying thing. That is a little bit different to, you know, say diving, which is, or, you know.
Yeah, pretending to get a push in the back when you don't.
It's not going to cause you to have dementia at 50. You know, it's just poor sportsmanship. So there's a part of me where it's like the whole idea of protecting the head and high tackles is actually the AFL done something, which is to make the game safe. And here players have... And teams are saying they're now coaching players to do this, to actively go against that thing of trying to prolong players' lives. Mm. And they're saying, look, let's just milk it. And I think there is something a bit wrong with that. I don't think that's necessarily...
It's not a good look, but...
It's not a good look, but also it's... when Selwood turns out at 50 to have, you know, dementia or something, and I hope that doesn't happen, but if, you know, you got to start to question... Or how much did doing that actually have an impact?
If you have to remind him how many premierships he won.
You know? So anyway, I mean, that's the thing. I kind of wonder how much is, you know, this going to actually impact kids and other people who copy it.
Yeah. And, but until they change the rules and
but hasn't it's not always just up to the umpires. I mean, players and clubs have to take some responsibility for this stuff because it is almost – they have made it almost impossible for an umpire in real time to judge. Did they play for that or did they, you know, actually...
Right. When you see the slow-mo replays, it looks so obvious.
Yeah.
But in anything.
And you can't tell the umpires, protect the head, and then they see someone's head get whacked and then go, well, technically they might have ducked, but they're erring on the side of caution.
Yeah.
So that's where I find it a bit weird when... plays. The thing that's going to be really interesting is if some of these teams that I think one or two have now come out and said, you know, we advise them. A player in 30 years actually gets diagnosed with an issue and comes back and says, my employer at the time taught unsafe behaviour to me.
You're looking
and
well
sues
ahead.
Them. I mean, you'd be a brave club to kind of kind of do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's far too sensible for me.
But hang on a second. I mean, you're looking 30 years ahead with retrospective lawsuits on occupational health and safety.
But that's issues, what any employer has to do.
I know, which brings us to our next point. Nanny state AFL.
That's right.
I was just trying a radio kind of segue.
That was a wonderful segue, actually. So AFL clubs have raised concern about a league crackdown.
Yeah,
I love that, a crackdown. On interactions with fans on game days. When did we suddenly start calling it like game day? It's such an American term. Anyway, driven by safety fears, apparently several clubs have invested in devices such as that can fire.
They use them in the States.
Yeah, they're like in the States in the buzzball. They fire T-shirts or merchandise into the crowd.
Mm.
Not at like a speed of a bullet.
No, they're not like shotguns. They're more like what we would call as kids an old-fashioned kind of Shanghai.
Yeah, that's right. So they shoot them up into the stand, so, you know, get them involved. The AFL's recently said that they have to turn down the power and that they can't launch them any higher than the first tier in case fans injure themselves diving for shirts. Isn't that just, you know, natural selection?
I was just about to say.
If you dive for a shirt and fall off the top of the, you know, come on, it's a T-shirt that cost, you know, $2 to make in China.
Mm.
Some 6-year-old stitched it together.
Yeah,
and you're going to die for
Bangladeshi
it.
Bangladeshi sweatshop.
That's right.
And if you're stupid enough to fall off the top deck and land and kill yourself, well, I was about to use exactly that same phrase. It's natural selection at its finest.
In fairness, though, if I'm sitting under that person on the bottom level, I'd be and they fell on me and killed me, then I'd be a bit upset. That's not natural selection.
But
that's
you can just still get their T-shirt.
This is why you should never. But this is why you should always sit in the members bar.
Oh,
is that the MCC's long room? They never sit outside of there.
They're never going to fire T-shirts into the long room. You can't wear a T-shirt into the long room.
No, that's right.
They might fire in some MCC ties.
A cufflink and tie set. That's a great idea.
Might try that on the weekend.
They just have a butler bring them round in the long room. They've also said that they've told players that they shouldn't hand out foam footballs for fear. So people are actually like, this is what's keeping them up at night, that they could be used as projectiles, which is kind of what a footy is.
So like foam footy is
used as they're meant to be used. So just because to show that they're not taking this too seriously, players have been told that they will first be warned and then fined $1,000 if they toss or boot a ball to supporters in the stand rather than gently handing them to supporters in the first row.
This has been going on for a couple of years now because, I mean, when we go to the MCC and we watch Melbourne play, we always sit down in that bottom level near the players' race. And it's been happening for a few years because I distinctly remember because Melbourne's wins have been so few and far between that when they take the little foam footies, they go right up to the fence and hand it to the kids.
Yeah.
And the kids, like my son with his broken arm, the one plus for that is he always hangs the plaster over the fence.
Oh, the sympathy.
Trying to get the sympathy vote.
Smart.
Jack Watts fell for it 1 week. Gave it to him, you know.
He actually doesn't have a broken arm.
No, he just puts it on every time we go. I'm going to get him a neck brace.
That's
next
right.
Week. But yeah, they're not allowed to kick them into the stands. And they're not full-size Sherrins.
They're foam.
You could fire one at your head using a Shanghai, for a T-shirt Shanghai, and do no harm.
See,
it's madness.
The only way I would be possibly happy with this rule is if the AFL came out and said, we're worried that it could spill someone's beer. Because those beers are expensive at the football. Like that's a $10 cost to me if I spill my beer.
I'm paying $8 for a plastic pot full of dishwater.
See, I was at a Yankees game in New York a couple of years ago. And the difference in the baseball is that the balls just get hit into the stands all the time.
Yep.
And at enormous speed, when they come off as a foul, not necessarily as a home run, but just a foul, it's sort of, and it just whizzes back. And they've got a net if you're sitting directly behind home plate, but a bit further up,
down the
you've
two
got nothing.
Sides.
Yeah. So when I was there, there was about 3 or 4 people seriously injured while I was there. Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. I was behind the mesh, so I was okay, but I was watching going, geez. But a few people in the baseball have actually died. Diving for foul balls.
They're
so that's
such a litigious place. And also the thing at the baseball, when I was at the Dodger Stadium in LA many years ago, And a traditional thing there is to you buy a packet of peanuts, and they're a sealed little paper bag full of peanuts. Now, what you do, there's a guy walking up and down the aisle with a box full of peanuts. You call out to him, you want a box of peanuts. They're a dollar each, or they were back then. You would give your dollar note to the bloke next to you, who will give it to the bloke next to him, who will give it to the woman next to him, until it got all the way down to the aisle. And then the guy would get the bag of peanuts, and he'd ping them at you, just like a pitcher.
Yeah.
You'd catch them. Imagine the AFL trying to do that. The biggest thing at a game here is you give your dollar to the bloke next door, just go, thanks.
Yeah, and just never get back to
would never
you.
Get to the guy at the end.
God, very dangerous with all peanut allergies too. soon we just won't do anything.
We won't even be able to go to the games.
This is my thing of it just staying home all the time.
Yeah.
I don't have, I'm in no danger of being hit by a foam football.
or a bag of peanuts.
Now, you were having a bit of a whinge about people selling home games this week.
Yeah. I mean.
This was solely in response to Melbourne losing in Alice Springs, wasn't it?
To Port Adelaide, it was. I mean, I was having a bit of a whinge, and then I thought, well, what am I whinging about? They need the money. And if I look at it in a sensible, rational way, which would be a first. Melbourne, if they're a decent team, it's that old cliche, you can win anywhere.
Yeah.
And they need the 600 grand for this, but they seem to get beaten every year. And then what happens, they go up there, Jack Viney has a punch on with Ebert and gets suspended for a week.
Do you think that was because he was in Alice Springs?
Well, you tell you what, if
it's a fighting town.
If he'd worn a balaclava and hit him with a flagpole, he would have got off scot-free.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. If you're protesting in Coburg, you're fine.
Yeah, so I was selling home games. I was having a bit of a whinge about it, and I thought, well, really, just as a team, just play better.
But even Hawthorn and North are in Tassie, so yeah. They sell games.
Hawthorn have made it work.
You had Richmond for a while in Cairns, and they kept losing up there, so that was quite funny. You've got Gold Coast, because of Port Adelaide, having to sell a home game to China. So, you know, it's all these weird sort of things happening. That
Greater Western Sydney trying to sell a home game in Greater Western Sydney.
they play Canberra and Greater Western Sydney. Yeah. So
Canberra, that's a footy town, isn't it? Yeah.
They're just copping it either way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think everyone should just play their home games at home, but that's a revolutionary idea, isn't it?
Well, it is.
Now, are you talking of big games? Big games coming up.
Oh, beauty. This
Frio week. Essendon this week. Oh. Can Ross Lyon continue the dream of going winless this season against Essendon? If he loses to Essendon, they can't pretend they're not tanking.
No, they can't.
There's no way.
We all know they're tanking. The irony of it is, if they do get the number one draft pick, it's the top six players are all from the GWS Academy anyways, so they're going to get about pick number seven. And see, you look at that Frio side, and I was watching them on the weekend, and they're feeling they're not only playing kids and they've sent out half their team for operations, even if they don't need them.
Yeah, that's right. And some of it's just cosmetic.
Exactly. Zach Dawson getting butt implants or something. You know, although, to be fair, and Zach Dawson, if he was feeding him, he would delist himself at the end of this year.
You've been saying that for his whole career.
He's been a spud for a decade.
I just think it's good. There was Xavier Campbell, the CEO of Essendon, came out and said, we'll be trying our hardest this week.
Oh, of course.
And I thought, well, there's one team. But getting the number one pick doesn't even really matter. Like, you need, if you've got in the top six, you've got as good a chance.
Oh, exactly.
You know, it's not like the NBA or something where there's like the LeBron James type. There's few number ones that have been like standout each year. So tanking.
Who was it last year? Wietering, Jacob Wietering. Well, he's done all right.
Yeah, no, he's been good. But looking 3 years, Jack Watts is obviously the best player that's ever played. But there's been a lot of great players that have come, you know, Nat Fyfe and others that came long after. AFL's a bit harder to predict.
Of course it is. Of course it's a team game.
So
it's basketball, of course. But, you know.
Well, to a lesser extent. Now, Leon Cameron this week, coach of the GWS Giants, many people in Western Sydney wouldn't know that. He said Fox Footy crossed the line by showing his personal coaching notes during Saturday night's broadcast. So they've agreed to not show it again.
Well, the problem was that he had his Tinder password on there.
It said here, though, that He said that it was his intellectual property and that they shouldn't have shown it. Now, let me read what his intellectual property is.
So I think the word
intellectual is mainly a bit overreach here. He wrote, mistakes will happen. Stay focused. Be calm. Give clear messages and love the battle.
Mm.
So that's his intellectual property. And he's saying, well, you know.
I think I used to say the same thing to my under 10 kids.
Yeah.
Without much extravagance beyond that.
Digital Watch wrote in.
I like Digital Watch. He comes up with some good gear.
Stuff. Leon Cameron's How to Coach flowcharts confirmed that what most people suspect about AFL administrators. I think that's pretty much like profit good, loss bad.
Bad, yeah. It's pretty straightforward.
Get good players.
But the funny thing is, Fox Footy, they sort of backpedaled something. Like, oh, sorry, Camo would... We'll never be showing that sort of stuff again. And really, I mean, if you saw the piece of paper he had it on, the font was about as big as you can print out on your
home
printer.
It was like a primary school thing. Yeah. It was unbelievable. Like, it's like remember to wash hands. That was sort of the way it looked. I was surprised he didn't just have written on there, remember, you have more first round draft picks than anyone in history. Because that's going to calm me down in the middle if I'm Leon Cameron. You know, you're going to win a premiership. Don't worry, mate.
Yeah.
It's a lot better than Brad Scott's notes, which read, make face, slam desk, look amazed at a decision, and throw hands in the air in disgust.
He's got that down pat, Brad Scott. He's a gun at that sort of thing.
Oh, he's great. Do you think Bomber Thompson, instead of having notes, he just had a menu? Remember when he ate a sandwich in the middle of the fourth quarter?
You're reminding me of that. He was chomping
down.
That
was one of my favourite things ever.
A schnitzel sandwich. They're about 18 goals in front, mind you, in his defence. He didn't even have a lot to do.
I know, but it's a bad look. And Stephen Dank fetched him, so who fetched the sandwich? So who knows what was in that? Now, this week, Daniel Ricciardo... Racing in the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yep.
He had a bungled tyre change. It cost him he was leading.
He was in front, yeah.
He was in lap 32, he pitted in, and in a case of miscommunication, which is selling it mildly, between the team's engineers and mechanics, he was left stranded in the pits waiting for the tyres to arrive. Like, you'd think the pits was where you'd have the tyres, wouldn't you?
You would think it would.
Oh, I've left them in the car.
32 seconds it took. It's like, yeah, you want to ring up. I need four more tyres for the whole... mate, could probably fit you in next Wednesday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Thursday.
Anyone that's been to a mechanic can relate to Daniel Ricciardo this week.
But what I found funny is he was quoted, he said, I've been screwed twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which I reckon for a Formula One driver is pretty ordinary.
Oh, exactly. apparently, he's had a few issues this week. He had punctures to his tyres, something to do with his tyres, in both China and Spain. He had collisions in Bahrain and Russia during the Grand Prix. He had incorrect tyre selection in Sochi and a controversial decision to pit for a third time in Barcelona that handed the Spanish GP to his teammate. So
maybe
they just don't know how to run a team, basically. That seems to be the real problem.
They've
there.
Obviously got Bob Jane in charge down there. But
how can you not have tyres? That's like the central point of your whole
but
job.
But the whole thing, you go back a bit, is he didn't just decide... Tell you what, I'll just pop in for a Red Bull and get four tyres while I'm there.
Hi, guys. Am I early?
Yeah, they've called him in. Hey, Dan.
Come in, we'll give you some tyres.
Got some four tyres ready for you. So he drives in there and there's all your four mechanics standing having a dart down the back. Oh, Jesus, Ricardo's here.
Well,
you know?
What I love about Ricciardo is he seems like a genuinely entertaining and nice person, but he was fuming. Mm. That was as angry a man as I've seen in a long time. That's like me if I haven't eaten for 3 hours.
Because they can go, those Formula One drivers. They're highly strung. And fair enough. I mean, they're part of a team, right? It's the Red Bull team, so everyone working together. But
allegedly,
but they are very much individuals. Your Formula One drivers. It's like your tennis players. They say, I've got my team behind me. But when a tennis player hits the ball into the net, it's not quite as risky as maybe driving your car into a wall at 320 kilometres an hour if you're on the wrong tyres or no tyres in Daniel's case.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're a strange bunch, Formula One drivers.
My favourite thing about it is they played the radio between him and his pit crew, basically, after he pulled out, after they finally got the tyres on.
Mm.
and they were sort of apologizing and saying things. And he said, just let's not talk about it. There's nothing you can say that can cheer, you know, to make fix it, this. Fix it or make it better now. Yeah. And it reminded me sort of like a fight a couple would have. There's nothing you can say. Just stop talking to me.
Well, it was the whole Red Bulls thing. It was, you know, tyres, whatever, whenever, you know.
Gavin McDonald wrote in, how long has Ross Lyon been coaching Daniel Ricciardo's pit crew?
I'll pay that one, Gav.
Oh, poor Ross. So we've got a few listeners' questions came in this week. Whiskers O'Brien, which is a great name.
A terrific name, Whiskers.
And a good point here. Please explain the physical phenomenon whereby the 15 metres a player is limited to running before bouncing the ball appears to the naked eye to be 2 to 3 times the distance of the 15 metre kick has to travel to be paid a mark.
Ooh,
you open the can of worms of distances in AFL.
Whiskers has obviously got a physics degree, I'd say, because you think what he's getting at, and he's spot on. The little chip kicks that are apparently 15 metres are a mark, but you take off the ball under your arm, he's saying it's almost twice that length before you have to bounce it.
Yeah.
And there's no penalty involved.
But this is the big problem. It's always been hard. It was hard when it was 50 metres for umps to get the distance, judge it right. So what does the AFL do? They bring the 10 metres round the mark. They bring in the 15 metres. You know, they've got all these.
24. Maybe they should put a grid on there like American footy.
Oh, that's it.
Every 10 metres there's a line. But then when they kick backwards, they're going to have it both ways. So it looks like a crossword puzzle.
That's right.
And that would work for the coaches.
Well, some coaches want to do that when they have zones anyway.
And if they have A, B, C round one boundary and 1, 2, 3, 4 the other, you just say, at that next stoppage, I want you to go to E7.
You're turning it into a giant game of Battleship.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Exactly.
This is all going to be solved with lasers. That's my theory.
There's nothing that isn't improved by lasers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Everything is better than lasers. Matt Conan has written in, should North Melbourne start playing kids and looking to 2017? Absolutely.
Oh,
they are spiralling out of
crashed
control.
Crashed and burned already.
I don't think they can mathematically from first make the top 8.
You don't think so?
Not now that they've lost to Sydney.
Oh, what if they... If they did lose the next 12 games,
they'd have to lose a fair. They'd have to really go on a tear.
Yeah.
They're pretty much there in terms of finals, but I just love how everyone's gone, well, that's it. They can't win the premiership now.
It just goes to show that they had no respect up until now. They get beaten by arguably the best team going around in Sydney and North written off immediately. I think it's fantastic. It just shows how fickle we are as fans.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried.
And the lack of love for North Melbourne.
They do have an average age that's similar to a nursing home.
That's true.
You know, as the season goes on, I do worry about them a little bit. But, Sydney are a really good side, so who knows. But, yep, North Melbourne season over, obviously. Simon's written in, with most of the Collingwood team being injured this weekend, how much will they offer to Jared Hayne to play so they don't have to pick Travis Cloak? What do you reckon? I reckon that... Is that Jared Hayne's new dream?
To play for Collingwood?
To play for Collingwood? Yeah. He's not that desperate yet, is he?
He's got options. Has he been given the arse by the Fiji Sevens yet?
I've got a feeling, this is just my prediction, I haven't read anything or anything. He played one game. He played one or two games in London. They had a bit of a tournament going on. And apparently in one game he did absolutely nothing, except at one point a player got past him and he did an ankle tap that stopped him, which is legal in rugby union, sevens. And the Daily Telly wrote a big headline that said, Jared Hayne's miraculous try-saving tackle.
Yeah.
It was the only thing he did in the whole game.
Or there was another former rugby great who has played a fair bit of rugby sevens. I can't remember who it was now. But he said, he watched the game, he said, Jared Hayne won't make it in the sevens. He's not fit enough.
Yeah.
He's unfit.
Well, this is the thing I'm predicting. It'll just quietly not happen.
Yeah.
There won't be any announcement or something. Like, people will notice and bring it up, but what's mainly going to happen? Just quietly, it's just suddenly going to be like, hey, is Hayden around? And you'll never hear from him.
He'll be looking for a new dream.
He'll be back in the NRL.
Of course he will.
What else is he going to do? You know, you're an NRL player. Play NRL.
Yeah.
What is it with the NRL, though? All their players always want to leave.
They always want to do something else. I mean, okay.
Like they go, when they go to union, you kind of go, well, that's understandable. They're very similar. But then they go to the AFL and they go to the NFL. These are not comparable sports, no. You know. So,
or boxing. They all want to punch on, which is a part of the NRL. It always traditionally has been. But you're right. You don't see too many AFL players go, tell you what, I think I might leave for rugby union.
Well, all AFL players leave to, like, all want to do is start a T-shirt business.
Yeah, or own a pub.
That's right. That's the only thing they want. Rhombus Isotope wrote in. He's a regular contributor. Yeah. Should ballot papers, this is for the election, also feature what teams candidates barrack for so voters know where they stand on the important issues?
That's a good point, because there is tradition there on politicians getting on board with clubs, which gives them no... credibility whatsoever. Remember when Paul Keating became a Collingwood supporter there for about a week? He looked so uncomfortable.
He's as convincing as Malcolm Turnbull is on sport. They're two blokes who have no interest in sport, and they pretend to... And pretending's worse.
Mm. Well, that's what I'm saying about Paul Keating. Everyone used to respect Paul Keating. John Howard was quite open about... He genuinely
liked other sports. He loved his
cricket. He loved his cricket. And people... Nobody particularly liked Paul Keating or John Howard, but they respected them for what they stood for and what they did. But Paul Keating lost a lot of support when he turned up at Collingwood with a Collingwood scarf on. He looked so uncomfortable. I mean, most people would, but Paul Keating especially. It wasn't, you know, a French antique suit.
No, that's right. I think candidates should have to say who they... ballot paper, because that would instantly change my vote.
Of course it would. They should declare their allegiance just like the four houses that they haven't already declared. Maybe they could declare...
You think that's right? They should declare sporting teams. I'm a Collingwood supporter, but my wife backs for Richmond.
I will barrack for the Sydney Swans in my wife's name, so don't hold it against me.
I like that. I think that's good. I haven't heard enough in this election about where the parties stand on the big issues like the shot clock, head-high tackles. Like, when are we going to hear about, you know, Northern Academies? We're hearing nothing.
There'll be an announcement soon. Bill Short, there'll be $100 million to a new Northern Academy.
For a Collingwood Academy. Now, we're in danger going on as long as the election campaign here. So this is the last question.
Yep.
Ben's written in, are you my father?
Right. Is this... Is Ben, look, I've got to be careful here. Is Ben not looking to you, towards you or I in some kind of weird paternity suit?
I'm a bit more nervous about this.
No, look, Ben, we've only got one thing to say, Ben, and I hope this answers it for you.
I am your father.
Darth Vader's his father.
Darth Vader's his father. Which, God, that was lame. But Ben, it's not Titus. It's not me. I suggest you look elsewhere, Ben.
Due to a rather unfortunate biking injury, it's not possible for me to be the father.
See, I understand that, but I just refuse to accept that you've ever been on a bike. There may have been an injury. Maybe when
it was against my will.
When you tackled the gorilla. That's where you caught that injury, but it certainly wasn't on a bike.
Oh, so that brings us to the end. We've been Titus in Paradise, and we're... everyone's been rating us on iTunes, so please go ahead and do that again and leave nice comments. We really appreciate that. It gives our egos that little boost we need to get through the week. And we'll be back next week.
We'll see you then.
Follow Titus in Paradise on Twitter @Titus O'Reilly and @Serge_Para.